This podcast is rated S for science and also for spoilers and swearing. There's going to be swearing.
Something is killing these people and sucking them dry.
Run! It's a stampede!
Welcome, everybody, to Cinematica Animalia.
Jesus!
I decided to do the welcome in the middle of a big stretch, and it came out a little long. Anyway, to Cinematica
Coming in hot.
Came in a really good time. Where we look at... this is a podcast where we... Fuck's sake.
Start again!
No, I'm not starting again. I'm keeping it in this time. This is a podcast in which we look at how somebody's favorite movie monster, creature, feature, parasite, alien, big old gorilla, wolf, motherfucker, would work in the real world by examining their ecology or physiology. This week, we are looking at the ecology of the big gorilla, wolf, motherfuckers from 2011's Attack the Block. Last week, we looked at their physiology, so go back and check that out if you want. But for the moment, let's put that aside. I will introduce co-host number one, Adam Harsick, and co-host number... Oh, hang on. Who is a fellow alongside me, PhD student. I at the Norwegian University of Science and Technology, Adam at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville.
I didn't think that Adam was a PhD student. I thought he was a candidate.
He's a PhD student. I'm a PhD candidate.
Ah, okay.
You're a student because you haven't done any fucking candidacy exams.
No, I'm a candidate because I get fucking paid a decent salary every year. Therefore, can't be a student. Anyway, we don't have candidacy exams in Norway. This is the whole thing. Go back, like, there's 50 other episodes where we have this fight. It's fine, don't worry. And we also both write for a website, ecologyforthemasses.com. And with us today is co-host number two, Dave, who is our vet friend from Eastern Canada. If we say Eastern Canada, it narrows it down to 200 people as opposed to the 400 people who live in Canada.
Vancouver. He's in Vancouver.
Isn't that the other side?
That's the joke, you idiot.
Yeah, it is. Okay, fine. I never know where things are in Canada. It's a very large place and there's not many people. And I'm from Australia, so I have no way of, you know, identifying with
you that. Lived here!
I did live there, yes, you're right. Anyway, today we are looking at, like I said earlier, the ecology of the monsters from Attack the Block. I don't think we have any news, so we'll just get straight into things.
Yep,
rock and roll!
Okay.
Then some like big dogs, some big gorilla wolf motherfucker comes down from the roof, rolls tongs, tears his neck all the way out, fam. Believe!
So, Attack the Block is an alien film with some very interesting monsters. They are constantly referred to as big gorilla wolf motherfuckers. We can't go into the history of them in cinema because they have no history in cinema, but what I thought it might be interesting to do this week was to look at the history of chimeras in cinema. Now, for those of you who don't know, chimera was originally a creature from Greek mythology. A fire-breathing, explicitly female monster. With a lion's head, a goat's body, and quite often a goat's head protruding from its back as well.
Or a snake's head for a tail.
Yes, a snake's head for a tail as well, yeah. So made up of three different monsters. Originally it was just that, but it's been now, it's come to be referred to as any sort of species which is a combination of distinctly different individuals. Chimerization in genetics is when you have one species that is made up of like two distinct genotypes of an individual. So transplants, that human. Sort of thing. Yes, even a human can be a chimera. I'm not 100%.
With two different DNA types.
Yeah, I'm not great with genetics, so I won't go into that too much. It's very much outside of my wheelhouse. Yep. But one of the most kind of obvious ones is another one from ancient mythology. The Sphinx. Is a really good example of a chimera. Human's head, lion's body, another typically female character. Hasn't actually been, like, I thought that'd be the really interesting one to go into, but the Sphinx has not been represented in film that often.
They missed their chance with Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire.
Yeah, great Sphinx in that book. They didn't use it at all. Fantastic riddle too. I can't remember what the riddle of the Sphinx in that one was.
Mm-mm,
but I mean, if Harry's dumbass could get it, then it's probably not
on his own without his friend's help.
Yeah. If Hermione had been there, maybe I'd have given the Sphinx credit. But if Harry could figure out a bloody Sphinx's riddle, then that Sphinx must be a real dumbass.
Yeah.
But there was quite a large Sphinx in the 2016 classic Gods of Egypt, starring Gerard Butler and
classic.
Mate, oh, it's brilliant. It's got Robin from Teen Titans in there. It's very briefly mentioned.
Holy,
there's a lot of
crap. It does.
Yeah. He's an Australian. Chadwick Boseman as well.
Yeah. Really?
Anyway, look.
Yeah,
he's in there. Yeah. Look, there's an all-star cast.
Marvel's Black Panther, for those of you that don't know actors' names.
Yeah. No, but so that's one. But again, that Sphinx was only in there for like 20 seconds. And then there's a lot of like movies from the early 1900s, The Mystery of the Sphinx, but it's all just like old white dudes digging around in temples and that sort of thing, and no actual mythology. So the Sphinx, unfortunately, has not been really represented on the big screen that much.
Mm-hmm.
Another cool example of a chimera in cinema is the Beast from Beauty and the Beast. to be fair, I mean, you've got somewhat of a lionish face, definitely mixed with traits of a human though. Walks on his toes, in most cases. Got a kind of real dog, cat, bottom half thing going on there. And generally the horns of a goat as well. Yeah. Obviously, that guy's popped up in cinema a couple of times. Most famously, perhaps, by portrayed by Ron Perlman. I don't know if you guys have seen the Ron Perlman Beast.
I haven't, but I know what you're talking about.
It is. Yeah. It's.
Just a massive prosthetics. Who's that? They also did it, of course, a couple of years ago when Emma Watson. Yeah, Emma Watson played Belle. Is it Gareth Evans, the actor that plays the Beast alongside her?
Never saw it.
Regardless, if you haven't seen like the footage of him when he's just in a big old muscle suit and dots over his body for the CGI, it is hilarious. And I highly recommend you look that up. A movie that I caught up on last night, which I've just realized the creatures in it are chimeras as well, is Jurassic Park. The dinosaurs in Jurassic Park.
They're all chimeras. Frog DNA, man.
Frog amphibian DNA.
One of the worst examples of, we put frog DNA in there, so therefore these things can do whatever frogs can.
Yeah.
Which was,
it was, the book was a lot better at going into a lot more of the details, and
they
wasn't like that, the crappy new Jurassic Park movies where they were just like, we're just going to mix everything in a bottle and create this super powered camouflage.
The Indominus Rex.
Oh, God.
That was good fun. Like, you just can't treat them as a classic of cinema anymore. But I don't know, I think they're kind of fun. Yeah.
The original one, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
No, but I mean the new ones. I mean Jurassic World, and not so much the second one. That was a bit more like, I don't want to see a home invasion version of Jurassic Park.
I kind of enjoyed that bit.
Moving on.
The only other one I could come up. The only other one I could really come up with is a classic example of a chimera in cinema is the movie Splice.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Now it's not explicitly said what Dren, the monster in the movie Splice, is a chimera of. Obviously, there's some human mixed in there.
Yeah. A lot of human mixed in there.
But God damn, is that a creepy animal? My God.
It's incredibly unsettling.
Oh yeah.
For so many reasons.
Towards the end, when it transitions into a male, my God, that is horrifying. Yeah. Mm.
What about The Fly? Now, The Fly is a great chimera film.
Oh, fuck, I didn't even think of The Fly.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Jeff Goldblum.
The Brundlefly.
Oh, there's another, yeah. The Brundlefly. Jeff Goldblum's, that's not strictly, I guess in a sense it is. It's just genetic
material. It is 100% a chimera. It is 100%.
It is definitely
a chimera.
It is a horrifying chimera, yeah. And as also is the movie which the antagonist, I guess, of the movie which that one is also based on. The I'm pretty sure that's also just called The Fly as well.
The sequel?
No. There's a movie that the Jeff Goldblum's The Fly is based on. It's
I don't know.
It's just a man with a fly's head though. Like, there's none of this horrifying vomiting on your food and then
no Cronenberg stuff
back up that Jeff Goldblum does. Yeah. It's one of the best examples of a Cronenberg monster. Oh man! And speaking of which, Adam and I were looking at a, we're listening. There's a podcast we listen to. I think anybody who listens to this will know which one we're talking about. Where there's a film called The Giver from the 1980s that has a scene of Mark Hamill transitioning into a cockroach, which is horrifying.
Yep.
My God. Dave's got a very concerned look on his face. You should really check it out.
I'm good. I see enough darkness.
If you think the monster transitions and the thing were bad, look at that.
Oh yeah, this is bad. Yeah, there's one other example I'd like to use though, and that is the creatures from the largely forgotten mid-noughties TV show Surface.
Don't know this one. Idea.
Not ringing any bells. No. Fair enough. Basically they're these, and there were some really cool shots. These huge species that are rumored to be like a combination of other species DNA that play the part in this. It's a terrible TV series. It started off such a promising sci-fi exploration of the underwater kind of thing, and it just devolved very quickly into a lot of political bullshit. But look, the creatures look fascinating, and I highly recommend going and checking them out. They've got like electrical impulses which they send through the water, which stun their prey. They look kind of reptilian, but they're the size of a blue whale. It's a really fascinating looking creature.
Big animal.
Anyway, yeah, very big animal. Yeah. Anyway, that about covers it. So let's get into the ecology of these big gorilla wolf motherfuckers.
Big gorilla alien wolf monsters killing everyone.
Maybe do anything on these ends.
Please, what kind of alien out of all the places in the whole wide world would invade some shitty council estate in South London?
Adam and I are going to have a look at habitat, where we think they hang out. We're also going to have a more in-depth look at reproductive biology than we usually do, because we've got some really interesting thing.
Or at least their sexual ecology. Maybe not their reproductive biology so much, but their sexual ecology.
Yes, sexual ecology we'll definitely dive into. And then look at their diet and their hunting tactics, because we went into some of their movement last week, but there's some very interesting mechanisms that could be going on here. But starting with the habitat, these things are really adept climbers. It's one of the first things we noticed. Like, we talked about this last week. I don't know if I mentioned it. In fact, I'm almost sure I didn't. You actually see one of them at one point climbing down a building face first.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Also, when they first run into Hi-Hat and his boy, one of them is upside down on the ceiling and it drops down. So they obviously have some kind of really good gripping mechanism to be able to hang on to concrete upside down.
Yeah, the males at least. The female, we get a much better look at her limbs, and I don't think
especially she looks like a primate.
Her feet look almost human. Yeah. I think she's going to be much more ground based. But the males, in any case, I think they're climbers. Now I was thinking of caves, but Adam, you pointed out that this doesn't really work.
No, they're way too big for caves. Their fur doesn't make sense for a cave like that. Yeah. I'm thinking they're going to be more of along the lines of maybe a tropical, but also maybe a temperate rainforest, where you have these really, really, really dense patches of forest, where when you get towards the forest floor, it's just pitch black. So at least for that, it kind of checks out with them not having eyes and kind of evolving to maneuver around without them. It also checks out for the climbing, because they'd be moving around these massive trees, and then that would play into the sexual ecology a bit later, but where we think that these males are going to be limited to mostly the ground or the lower branches that are going to be big enough to support their massive weight of about 160 kilograms. But then these females, and also maybe their young, are going to be able to climb further up into the trees, onto these smaller branches, and stay away from the males when they're not in rut.
Yeah. So I think whatever planet they're on, their home planet, they've got to be inhabiting a forest system, like you said, with a really densely packed canopy. And this forest system has to be huge as well. Like, these things cannot be occupying anywhere where there's light, because as soon as you have light, there's an advantage to evolving eyes. And these things have no eyes whatsoever. They don't seem to have any visual receptors. So they have to be essentially existing in a world that's pitch black.
Or the planet that they're on doesn't have a good solar cycle associated with the sun. They're still getting enough heat from some sort of planetary body, something like a sun, but if the orbit was in such a way that there's an area that just simply doesn't get that much access, they could be in a period. I mean, it'd be really difficult to build.
Much too cold.
I know our whole thing has been them not having eyes, but one thing that could also be happening is that they have very, very, very small, very underdeveloped eyes compared to what we have, and you just can't see them in all that fur. So it's enough to distinguish variation in light intensity, so they can kind of be a little bit phototaxic. Yeah. But
I still think you'd be able to see them on the female, though, because it makes no sense for the female to
have... Yeah, you're right. You would see them on the female. Yeah.
But again...
So maybe they have, some sort of light sensors, but I don't think so. But look, that's fine. We can hypothetically create a dense enough canopy on another planet.
Okay.
That they can exist in pitch black. But it has to be a massive forest. They would not be going anywhere near the edges because that would give them a disadvantage. You could potentially have other species that do... Because, I mean, otherwise the glow-in-the-dark teeth make no sense whatsoever. If they're potentially using them as a lure, then you maybe have the sort of thing where other species are a bit light-sensitive. They can see bits of light. They spend more time, out in the edges of the forest where, they're more light's likely to get in. And these big gorilla wolf motherfuckers are potentially using their teeth as a lure.
Kind of like an anglerfish.
It could also be... Because, I mean, there are amphibians that are pretty... Are there amphibians that are bioluminescent, or am I just thinking of just fish and some worms?
There are two amphibians that I believe have bioluminescence capabilities.
Okay, so that fits. So with these... With the big gorilla wolf motherfucker's teeth, there's a lot of them. They kind of go all the way around the mouth and even down the throat. And that immediately brings to mind the teeth of like a sea turtle. If you've ever seen those, it's kind of horrifying to see the inside of a sea turtle's mouth because they just have all these inward facing teeth because they use them to catch like really slippery jellyfish and kind of hold them in there once they grab them. And I'm thinking, and this kind of fits along with their glowing teeth, that in this forest, there's a pretty dense amphibian population that are of a decent size. Amphibians are pretty quick, for the most part. They're pretty slimy. And so what the big gorilla wolf motherfucker might be able to do is use the teeth as a lure, or just to be able, as a more efficient way of grasping and hanging on to a slippery, quick prey like that.
Yep. Okay. Yeah. I'm also thinking, though, that these guys, and maybe we should get into this later when we talk about diet. Or do we just want to talk about diet now?
Go for it.
Yeah, let's just talk about diet now. I think that these... morphologically, at least from what we see, I think these guys have things in common with two species that we see on Earth, one being a gorilla, the other one being a jaguar. I think these are drop bears, in the purest sense, the closest we can get to them.
I like that a lot.
I think these guys, climb up low-hanging trees, maybe lure things close to them. We can see that they're good jumpers. They could easily, if you get something below one of these creatures and they jump down onto it, I think they could quite easily take it down. They're shown to have very strong jaws, very strong neck muscles, good for like really holding onto a larger prey species.
Yep.
But I do think that if they need to use lures, they are going to be going after large, quick prey. So potentially you have really large amphibious species, very wet. Maybe there's, massive amounts of swamp in this forest as well. It's a weird ecosystem we're creating, but it's on an alien planet, so that's okay. I don't think so. Dave was talking last week about how these things get up to really high speeds. I don't think they can maintain them for very long.
No.
I think it's kind of a jaguar versus a cheetah situation, where a jaguar will creep up on something. But it won't, if it gets away from if its prey gets a head start on it, it won't be able to keep up. They really have to track it down within the first, 10, 15 seconds, otherwise it's gone.
And get really close too.
So. So I think that these things are really, they're creeping up on their prey, or they're luring them in. And then there's a short chase, or, a jump down, that sort of thing. I think they're primarily ambush predators. And like I said, the fact that the teeth go in like that, they must be like really gripping onto things. The only other thing I've got down in notes that is worth mentioning that I've already put down is, oh my god, they are drop bears. So, yeah.
Yeah, really, really enjoyed that quite a bit.
Yeah. Now, the amount of hair that they've got on their bodies...
Mm-hmm.
Would suggest that they live in quite a cold ecosystem. And also lends credibility to what Adam and I were talking about earlier when we said that the males probably live quite low to the ground where it's a little bit colder.
Oh, okay. I think
if you go up towards the canopy more, potentially you have more absorbency, which is why more absorbency of heat closer to the canopy, which is why the females don't need to eat as much, because I mean that female, she is a
tiny.
Sorry, which is why the females don't need as much hair. Because, I mean, the females, I don't think the males and the females are hugely different in size. I mean, if you've ever seen a poodle get shaved, you'll know how big those things actually are.
Yeah, there's got to be a big size difference between the male and the female.
There's still a big size difference, but I don't think those things are anywhere near as big as they appear.
No, I think they are, though. I think when you put your hand on it, kind of look at how the fur isn't that long. So those things are still incredibly massive.
And these things are capable of just crushing human beings the same way that like a gorilla or a bear would. They've got to have about the same amount of mass underneath their fur as a gorilla or a bear would, versus that little dog thing is small lab sized at best.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, fair enough. Okay, yeah.
And you see this, there's going to be a lot more muscle
and a lot less... Like, they look very chunky. I don't think they're going to be chunky. I think these are going to be, like, ripped
muscle. Yeah, I think they are as well.
Yeah, yeah. Like a gorilla. They're
like built. A gorilla.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, we talked about this briefly last week. The fact that they kill so many people in this, I think they're not really looking to murder all these people. They're just following that pheromone trail, and they are killing anything that gets in their way.
Yeah, they might...
Moses went into that police van, and they killed the cops purely because they're trying to get to...
Because they touched him, because they were covering that pheromone as well now. And it might have been a case of they see them as competition, or just frustration with not finding the female when they expected to find the female, and just being in rut. Because I know that at least for... And Sam can touch more on this than I can, but with the moose... finding a bull moose in rut in the wild is one of the most dangerous things you can do, because it's going to kill you.
Yeah. So, Cammy and I was living in Sweden for a month in 2017. Cammy came and visited. There was a moose park nearby, and I'd completely forgotten that it was the time of the year when the moose were rutting.
Oof.
We called them up being like, hey, we're going to come visit today. Is that okay? And they were like, no. This is the wrong time of year, man. This is not the time of year you want to be hanging around moose.
No.
You would not want to be around these guys when they're horny, and these things are horny. They want to fuck that poor little creature.
Yeah. They are down to
clown. That female is in for a... However, now this is kind of a more obscure point that I should touch on before we get into reproductive biology. We're talking about these things in terms of male or female today, but we had an interview, or two of my colleagues did, with a professor, Marlene Zook, towards the end of last year. And she was talking about the fact that we always think of, oh, everything has to be male or female. But that's not the way that sexes on the planet needed to evolve.
No.
No.
By all means, you could have had things evolving in terms of spectrums. I mean, you look at an ant colony, there are tons of different things that fit tons of different roles. That could have quite easily happened on the planet. Where you had like four or five different sexes fulfilling different roles in a species.
It could, but the way that the species is interacting, it really points towards a female choice, male competition system.
Oh, yeah.
Well, with the exception of...
I just wanted to point out the fact that, you know, this whatever planetary system they come from, this could be just two of the different types of morphologies that are represented.
Right. Yeah.
But it gets a little complicated if we go into that. So we're just going to look at these guys as male and female.
Well, but Sam also does bring up a good point. We never have any proof that the big ones are males. The big ones could be females, and the little one could be the male. This could be a situation where we just have a large group of females that are seeking out the single, small, defenseless male as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That is a good point, though, yeah. But we're going to go with what is generally seen as a pattern in nature. Maybe it's not. I don't know. We'll...
Group of white males sitting down and discussing what the normal gender patterns are.
Happy International Women's Day, everyone.
God damn it.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, we forgot to mention that last week, bugger. Anyway, let's just move on. Anyway, look, there's very obvious sexual dimorphism here. Dave touched on this briefly last week. I think that female looks like it's about 15-20 kilos heavy.
At most.
But the males are well over 100.
They are big.
Like, yeah, they are big.
Chunky boys.
When they get Hi Hat's friend, that thing just mucks him, and he's a big guy. Just mucks him.
He is bowled over,
throws him down, slams him down. He's done.
And just destroys. Yeah.
Yeah, and they are like, when they finally get Hi-Hat, like, his face is...
That effect was like that. Awesome.
Oh, I know. 1 second, it's like his face is playing Now You See Me, Now You Don't. It is... Oh.
And then his nose is gone, his top lip is gone, part of his bottom jaw is gone.
Yeah, good movie.
It's brutal.
Horrifying, yeah. Now,
Hi-Hat's such a good B-villain. I love it.
He was good fun. Yeah, like I said, he really reminds me, last week, he really reminds me of Noel Taylor's Mickey Smith from Doctor Who. His character in Kid Offerwood is almost exactly the same. Just a drug dealer they cross and it's...
Yeah. But at least Hi-Hat can back it up. He keeps pointing the gun at Mayhem and props in their face as he's talking to him.
Yeah, just get that strap, man.
That was
a
lot of fun, that was, yeah. Get that strap, get the snitch.
I've got to say, one of my favorite British phrases whenever it is used in these films is always trust, bruv. Trust, bruv. It just rolls off the tongue so well.
Believe.
Oh, man. We're watching, we're watching Misfits at the moment, and Kelly's character. Oh, it's good fun listening to her talk. Yeah. The Chav. Not represented enough in American mainstream films, I feel. Mm-mm. Anyway,
we have the Chad.
But, yeah, this is the interesting thing. All the males look exactly the same. There might be some size differentials, but I can't see
it. It looked like there were some very slight, but it might have just been the camera angle. They all look to be the exact same size.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, there are species whereby males are very similar, but generally if they're competing over a female, one tends to have a bit of an advantage over the other.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, moose, when they fight, that's not true. I guess when polar bears go at each other, like, they're generally similar. So
I think I touched on this last week for the Making a Monster, where you have, it was Planet Earth or something like that, but they actually have footage of these two male polar bears going at it for a female. Oh. And just the winner looks like he's about to die because he's so messed up because of how evenly matched they were.
Oh, yeah. The walrus and the elephant seals as well, when they fight, it is horrific. Yeah.
Yeah.
We were at the Natural History Museum in Oslo last week, and they have a T-Rex skeleton down there. They show all these injuries, like bite marks on its face that were inflicted probably by other T-Rexes. It's really
wow. Kind of
like, just because you are a top predator does not mean your life is easy.
No.
Although something the T-Rex was a scavenger, but that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. That's because, I mean, yeah, they weren't really capable of high speeds. So no. They really would have had to be an ambush predator in any case. But you have a lot of males here competing over one female. And female, she is in bad condition.
She is, but what might also happen is... We talked about this a little bit off air, but in garter snakes, you have these mating balls form where you'll have one female and tens to maybe even 100 males all swarming around her, just trying to get in there and mate with her. So with these, you kind of see it in the end when they're all in Ron's apartment at the end, they're all just kind of, they're together. They are growling a little bit at each other, all sniffing a little bit, but they're not really fighting with one another yet. They're all very close, clustered close together, as if they're waiting for that female, because they can smell the female. They smell it's around, but they can't find her yet. So maybe when they do find her, they all just kind of pile onto her and try to mate as quickly as they can.
But I don't think that's going to be the case here. I think there's going to be some really vicious fighting amongst those things.
Oh, there would have to be.
Because, I mean, they're... Oh, god damn. Sorry, I'm just watching the garter snake mating ball.
Yeah, do yourself a favor at home, listeners. Look that up.
That is horrifying. If you're if you're afraid of snakes, don't watch this. But that is the exact like title of the video. God damn. Yeah. Anyway, I think there's going to be a lot of like really scrappy. Like these things are just going to be taking chunks out of each other, like just big going time. At it to big win time. That female. I think there's going to be a lot of posturing beforehand, like a lot of that screaming and vocalizing that we hear from them.
Yeah.
I think there's going to be a lot of screaming before the mating starts. Yeah. But because
that's a big thing with these animals when they compete, and I think we talked about this with the Making a Monster with the tree wolf, where this posturing is a more often than not you're going to be postured off of a competition. You are actually going to be fought off because neither organism wants to be part of this fight because there's a chance they're going to have a life threatening injury or die. So it's much better to just look big and instead of having to actually fight somebody.
Now, the other interesting thing is, like, this is clearly the rut for these species. Yeah. However, the female looks like she is in terrible condition. Which doesn't really make sense, because you're supposed to be in really good condition before you are...
I mean, we're only really looking at her after she's dead, after she's been smashed to pieces by these, like, youths. I don't know if, like... And also, our...
But she's got the ribs protruding...
I don't know.
It's also going to be maybe kind of a mismatch as far as... She was in Esterus a little bit before these males in particular went into rut, but there might have been other males around that were more in sync with her cycle.
Right, and our concept of what looks healthy coming from observing like a physiological tissue from another alien, she could in fact look quite healthy for what the sought-after traits are for that planet.
But she's extremely skinny. You've got bones protruding all over the place. That hair looks like it's coming out in chunks. Now, I mean, they were all going at it with baseball bats and, like, big old sword. I don't think that's gonna, you know...
I don't think it'll affect the hair, but she may just have a very sparse hair growth. And as to, like, the low body weight, it might be a trend among the males. One of the reasons they're killing is to try and bring, basically, offerings or material to the female... to assist in the development and gestation period, which we sometimes see in certain
species. See in nature quite a bit.
Yeah. So she could
another solution, though, that I think is interesting and like a really good theme to introduce, which is there's a lot of... There's some mammal species which have a pause between fertilization and actual implantation of the embryo. What you'll have is the mating will occur. The species will be, you know, fertilized, but the embryo won't start growing yet. So what could potentially happen is, and maybe this is to, you know, line up with temperature cycles, climate cycles on the home planet whatsoever, these species have their rut, get fertilized, build up fat stores to get them through the pregnancy, and then the embryo is implanted.
Okay.
Yeah, and that also adds another level to the competition between the males, because at least in some species on Earth, and I think this is mostly insects, I can't think of any other group that does this, but the female will sequester sperm and then make her choice as far as which one is going to fertilize her eggs
after mating. Okay, yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, that could work as well, yeah. Especially if, that also would give the male, because the females don't look like they're very good hunters.
No.
So it could, and if there's massive amounts of fighting between the males, once the victorious male comes out on top, gives him time to get his, you know, body shape back together so he can go hunting for the female while she's pregnant.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Could work out interestingly, yeah. However, the thing is here that because they look so vastly different, I think that it's even gotten to the point where they're probably occupying different habitats. Because like we said, the males are obviously very good climbers, but the females, their feet especially, their legs do not look like they're built for climbing at all.
No, not really.
Yeah, and so I was thinking that potentially you have the case of our polar bears, which I think Adam brought up on the Making a Monster episode as well. The fact
that
the male polar bears will go actively hunting for females with cubs.
Or if they find a female with cubs, they'll wipe out all the cubs. And lions do the same thing, where when a male lion gets a new harem of females, he'll kill the offspring from the previous male so he can then further his genes.
And it is a primate thing as well, so...
Yeah. So I think once the male's taken care of this thing and the baby's been born, the mother and the baby just, scarper.
They're gone.
They use some sort of different habitat.
Okay.
Potentially, look, if they are good climbers, maybe they're swinging a lot. Maybe they're getting up to the tops, right up into that canopy, where it's almost like a network of trees. And
they have very long forelegs or front arms, so it could be that the feet are really just used kind of as a base for just standing and resting, but these arms might be doing the majority of the climbing itself.
Yeah. They kind of have to be climbers, because we talked about this already, but... The females have opposable thumbs on their hands.
Yeah.
The only real species of mammals anyway that have evolved opposable thumbs use them for climbing. We don't use them for climbing anymore because, you know, we kept them around because we can use tools and that sort of stuff. They're good for firing weapons.
To fire your weapon with your thumb, you idiot.
Yeah, how far away from my farm? Unless, do you hold a gun? I don't know. I don't hold guns.
Guns are upside down in Australia. You're right.
But yeah, I think they're probably occupying... Yeah, the trees. Like you said, further up, Adam, where a 160-kilo male is not going to be able to climb.
And you see this kind of character displacement in Anolis Lizards, for example. You have all these trees where you'll have different parts of the tree, and these different anole species have specialized on different types of branches. You have itty-bitty-bitty anoles that can live on these itty-bitty-bitty thin branches, but then you have the crown giants, these big anoles that are maybe 30 centimeters long that live on these big, thick branches towards the top. There's also some that live on the trunk, some that live on the base, and so what might be happening is this displacement between the sexes, where the females and the young, at least for a time, live high up in the tree, away from the males, but then they come down to the forest floor when they're in estrus.
Yeah. Okay. All right, well, yeah, I think that that kind of covers it all, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Now, just to wrap up this section, I don't think that we kind of already touched on this. I don't think that these would create a threat, real threat to humanity outside of...
somebody was unprepared when they had no weapons.
Yeah, I mean, they killed 5 kids. I mean, if the military rolled in there with weapons, I think this threat would be over pretty quickly. Which makes this movie doubly interesting, because it doesn't really work without that social commentary in the background.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I think is, yeah, it's just a really good... And also, I have already forgotten whether or not we talked about this last week, but Moses is definitely responsible for that thing. Like,
oh, 100%.
Eating all... Yeah, like...
Yeah.
If he had just left them alone to fuck, like, they would have been fine.
Yeah, and they
bring... touch on that in the movie, too.
Yeah, they bring that up, and they're sort of their own version of, you know, great power, great responsibility. Like, there are consequences to your actions.
This is always what you do, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And responsibility, like, yeah, this is kind of your fault.
Yep. Right, yeah, and reproductively, we didn't touch on this very much, but I think these things won't have massive life histories. I think it'd have quite quick, I think they'd reach adulthood quite quickly, like 1 or 2 years. I think they'd maybe survive to 5 or 6, because they're really kind of high. Having said that, what's the life expectancy of a jaguar?
I would think more a bear than a jaguar. Jaguar, as we say.
Yeah, but I think they're moving a lot more than bears. Maybe 12, 15... Yeah, I think maybe 12, 15 years.
Okay. Yeah, tops. And the females will probably live longer.
Yep, yeah. But I think... potentially even less for the males, just because they're going to spend so much time fighting, I think.
Yeah.
They'll spend massive amounts of time fighting with each other. If what we see when they crash land, like that whole 1 to, you know, 50 ratio of men to males to females is... accurate.
Are the females going to be reproductively active throughout their entire lifespan?
Oof.
If they're going to be more mammalian, they're probably going to hit menopause. And they do appear to be mammals.
What? Menopause? Menopause only happens in 3 different species of mammal.
Oh, wait, you're right. What am I thinking of?
Yep. I think that makes sense, that they're going to keep being, they'll have a slightly longer lifespan, and they'll be reproductively active all the way through.
And this might have been an old female. That's why she looks so decrepit.
Exactly.
Oh,
yeah.
Interesting
idea. That's also a very good point. This could be, a very old female.
Do something! Fuck face! Earn it! Show me something real! I need it now! Not later! Now! I'm calling on you! I'm calling on you!
Alright, Adam, you got a versus for us?
Absolutely. So, we've got these... keeping going with that social commentary theme, we're going to go more towards the Great White Hunter aspect of English culture, where you have some kind of rich heir or heiress, and they've got too much money and too much time because they don't actually work, they just own property or maybe even slaves. And they're going down to Africa, where a population of the big gorilla wolf motherfuckers is established, but they need to bring some kind of guide, because although they're confident in their own abilities, they need to have that local hunter just kind of show them where to go, so they don't need to do any work themselves. So, they hire Liam Neeson from The Grey, who has experience with apex predators and dangerous, smart creatures that work together. So, okay. Now, who wins?
What does Liam Neeson have to wipe all these things out? How many are there? Like, you say establish the population.
I think what would happen is that these males have been seen before because they're going to be more mobile, more active, more aggressive than the females. So what this hunter wants to do is get a female and bag it and bring it back for a trophy.
So I'm thinking a scenario like I was just watching Jurassic Park 3 where Liam Neeson gets dragged down there and he doesn't realize that they're actually trying to get a female. So they've killed a female. Liam Neeson's just found out about this. He's very pissed off, and now he has to defend these dumb rich people against this attacking onslaught of...
Yeah.
Ooh.
Of males in rut.
I don't think Liam Neeson can do much against this sort of onslaught.
No, like, I don't think so either.
Maybe 4 or 5, and he's got like modern weapons, and he's prepared for it mainly.
They'll have modern weapons, kind of, for sure. Times.
Ooh, okay. Well, that changes things.
Yeah.
But the only problem is there's not going to be a lot of them. There's going to be maybe 2 or 3 hunters, and maybe they're like their bag boys who carry all their stuff for them because they can't do actual
work.
What
is the environment that he's hunting in? Like, because I mean, if this
it's a forest. It's right. Deep, deep, dark forest. So they need headlamps themselves. It's very dense. There's a lot of canopy cover, and this is the natural population, and they're in rut. So all of these males are going to be in a much dense population than normally would be. So I think they're fucked.
Yeah, I think they're fucked too. I don't think. I don't think there's much they can do here.
No,
because I mean they're just going to be dropping on them one after the other. Like they're going to be all they're going to be
coming
lit
out of the
up,
woods
right?
constantly.
Because, yeah.
Whoa. It doesn't matter how many bullets they have. There's going to be more of these creatures, and they're probably going to put an entire magazine into one of these because they're so scared.
Yeah, and they're tough. Yeah. We see they take a fair... Like, except for the fact that Hi-Hat apparently kills one of them in the elevator somehow unscathed. But...
Well, I think they were all just emptying bullets into that, and Hi-Hat just managed to survive.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, in that close confine, it was maybe eating his friends or his goonies, and he was just able to put one right in the head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
we see, like, he gets it... Right. I don't know where because he shoots one when it's attacking.
It was the same one that was in the hallway. He shot it a few times, then they turned and ran. So it had already been wounded a bit.
I mean, they do.
Oh no! I mean the first one that shot that attacked his big mate. His chunky.
He had a bigger gun. Yeah, for that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
and he was really close.
You do kill them with skates though, and you do stab them in the throat. But yeah, no, I can see these. Yeah. Okay. I could definitely see them coming out on top.
Especially if you like, if there's open plains, I think that's going to help them a lot. Because even at night time,
I don't think there's
going
to be though. This is a really, really dense forest.
I think the dense.
Yeah, this is a dense jungle. Yeah, they're fucked. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that Liam Neeson unfortunately is not going to be able to gray his way out of this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, can we spend like 5 seconds on my scenario, which was
sure.
5 gorilla wolf motherfuckers against 5 gorillas and 5 wolves?
Yes, I kind of love that.
That are working together.
Somehow working, like the gorillas have domesticated the wolves. And they're working together to bring these things.
These are the gorillas from the Congo.
The gorillas from the Congo.
I would actually.
So they're already in a dense jungle.
Yeah, they've come into contact with them.
I think these gorillas are maybe using some tools, and they've used the wolves to maybe lure them out of the more dense canopy cover. They could maybe get them into a trap or just beat them to death with rocks. But if they're in the denser jungle, they're fucked.
The bigger little motherfuckers, they can climb. Like, gorillas can climb, but not that high up. Yeah.
And you guys saw that little popular GIF I sent you of gorillas don't actually know powerlifting techniques, which means we've never seen a gorilla at full strength. So, if these are intelligent enough gorillas to have domesticated wolves, I also assume they've probably been hitting the iron pretty hard.
Been pumping iron, yeah. I think, look, if you put them in an open field and let them go at it, I think, you know, they send the wolves in
to flush them out.
And then they come in afterwards to flush them out. Yeah, maybe that'd work.
I'd give it to the gorillas and the wolves then.
Yeah, okay, good. Gorillas and wolves. Oh, that was... Sorry, everyone.
There is a classic Simpson moment of anyone at home that needs to look up following this of the wolves and the wildcats working together to try and catch Homer. Which is a big group of them all, like, in a huddle, talking, and then...
That I have not seen.
Okay, watch it at home when you get a chance.
I think I've seen that one, yeah, that's good.
Alrighty, I think that's just about it. Thanks for listening, guys. Like I said, next week we're going to be looking at the... What's it called? The Forest King, Adam?
The Ritual. I'm calling it the Forest God.
Okay.
The Forest God. Okay, from, yeah, 2017's The Ritual.
Yeah.
First time we've really delved into proper horror, I think. 2018, okay, yeah. First time we've delved into really kind of hardcore horror, although...
The Quiet's...
Apparently...
Yeah, it's Netflix original taken off of a book of the same name. So if you have time and you like books, read the book. It's a pretty quick read, but there are some differences that I'll touch on in the episode.
Yeah.
Okay.
But there's, I mean, technically King Kong is a classic horror film as well, and Gremlins too, but I mean, they don't really feel like
Your it. Face is a classic horror film.
God.
Anyway, moving on. Adam, take us home.
All right, you can find Sam and I on Twitter at SamParentNTNU and at HassockAdam. Find the podcast at C_Animalia. Check out our website, cinematicaanimalia.com. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, or ideas for other monsters, send us an email, cinematica.animalia@gmail.com. If you want to see some more of the ecology stuff that Sam and I do, the research we'd like to touch on, check out ecologyforthemasses.com. And just remember, the monsters aren't real, but the science is.
Bye, balls.
See you guys.